All right, we're live. Tappin' Birdie, Pebble Beach Pro-Am. We got Steve here. We got Twitterless Steve, you know, my opposite. I live on Twitter. You're not on Twitter. But I'm glad you could join me for this this Pebble Week. It should be a good one.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on. I feel very privileged that you invited me on for such a, you know, strong field, really high-profile event. I really appreciate, you know, just being honored to join you tonight to break down Pebble Beach and a three-man tournament.
I understand because, you know, I get invited on pods and you always want to be invited on for a good one. So I just want to go out and say that this event strength does not reflect the guest strength. This week, you're a fantastic guest. You're a fantastic host of your own pod. You'll be back on for a good event in, you know, the spring, summer, 100%, because we're keeping the circle tight this year. I think that's one of the things I'm looking for this season is just kind of have my favorite guests on more often. Bring out and have a bunch of random people on that's kind of my mouth. So you'll be on for a good event in the spring, summer, 100%.
Well, you know, I mean, there's sort of a charm to kind of breaking down an event like this too, because like, we're going to be picking some bums tonight and it's kind of nice to have that pie in the sky attitude about, okay, maybe this guy who maybe only has three top tens his entire career, he can somehow win a PGA Tour event, you know, rise for 4 days. So, you know what? These are actually kind of the fun ones. Like it's, you know, it gets kind of boring talking about Tony Finau or Xander or Rob and how great they are and how we're going to bet them out. Right now, we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to have a little bit of fun with the card tonight. I'm pretty happy and stoked to be here.
You know, this, like, if you're not Aiko that like doesn't bet the PGA Tour every week, like, yeah, you don't like love these types of events, but like, people that like us that are like literally paid to put out content every single week and love like betting guys down the board and know a lot more players on the PGA Tour. Like these weeks are fine. Like I have no problem with these weeks. Like obviously you would like to bet an elite golfer like sub 30. But you don't really have that option this week unless you bet one of the top three. But I truly have no issue with this event. And again, it's just kind of boned by the schedule. And we're going to have two really, really good weeks of golf after this. And then kind of a down week. And then API is going to be excellent. Really, really good. That's another elevated event. So we got some golf coming up. And this is just kind of, you know, just like kind of a filler week, you know, like a filler episode of a TV show. Like nothing's really going to happen, but you know, some fireworks are coming soon.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of seems like you mentioned that it's basically a down week. It almost seems like the PGA Tour kind of botched how it allocated its elevated events. It seems like this would have been a really good spot for them to actually make this event an elevated event because it's the week before the Super Bowl. Nothing is going on. The PGA Tour really could have owned this weekend, and the Phoenix Open, it already has its own identity. It didn't need an elevator that you're probably going to get guys. So hopefully they do that in the future. And it would be nice actually to kind of see these guys come to Pebble Beach, come to arguably one of one of the most iconic golf destinations in the United States to see a lot of a really good field take this stuff on. So, and maybe when it's elevated, you get rid of the Pro-Am. I'm sorry for everybody who loves Bill Murray and Larry the Cable Guy, you know, we'll let some real golfers play. But this year, you know, we got this field. Probably going to see a lot of celebrity shots, especially if guys like Spieth, Hovland, and Fitzpatrick are nowhere to be seen over the weekend. It's going to be a lot of stuff that CBS is going to have to pull out. Maybe they'll interview Aaron Rodgers and ask about where he's going to go, kind of like they did with Max Homa as he was
lined up a shot. Yeah. Well, I saw something that they're doing another interview this week. They didn't say who it was, but I saw on Twitter that there will be another live interview that they did like with Homa last week. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that only two rounds are played at Pebble, like they have to change that if they want to make it elevated. Like if there wasn't a Pro-Am, could they potentially have four rounds here? Do you know that like could the reason they can't is because it's a pro-am and the rounds take a lot longer. But if there was no pro-am, could they potentially have four rounds at Pebble?
Of course. I mean, a couple of years ago during the COVID year, they only did it at Spyglass, and here they had three rounds. So you just add another round to it. But you're right. I mean, just because of the pro-am format, 7-hour rounds. And that's what makes it really a tough watch if you're a fan, and which is why it's kind of too bad there's not really a good field here, because, you know, with nothing else going on, unless you want to watch the Pro Bowl or something, it could be must-watch TV. But yeah, like, I mean, this is, you know, a really tough hang for watching. It kind of sucks too, because I'm up in New York, you're up in the Northeast too. There's really not a lot going on outside either. You know, so, you know, like I don't mind this time of year having a really kind of crap feel, because I'm inside, I'm watching golf in the summer, different deal. But yeah, I mean, like I think once they do elevate it and actually treat AT&T with respect, you know, because they've been neglecting them for years, probably the solution would be they'd have to get rid of the pro-am format, because I can't imagine a lot of those top players want to sign up for that. And they probably would play all four at Pebble. I think that would be perfectly fine. I'm fine with watching Pebble Beach for four straight rounds. There's some issues with the golf course, but listen, you're by the ocean, iconic holes, you know, all good with
me. Yeah. And we're going to have a guy in the mix, like 100%. Like, I firmly believe that we will have a sweat this week between us. And I'm really, really hoping that of the top three, like only one of them are like really in contention going for it, because I think a lot of guys are live this week. And last year we saw a lot of, you know, quote unquote jabronis at the top of the leaderboard, and they all really had a chance on Sunday. But I do remember this event last year. I remember I had Shami Pau and I had Tom Hoagie, and Shami was like that Friday. I like remember being like, this is like the best thing ever. Like Shami was just like literally birdied every hole and was just running away with it. And I was hype. I was hype about Shami. And then he obviously just absolutely fell apart Saturday. And then Sunday, I vividly remember I had a party Saturday night, and I was extremely hungover on Sunday. Like, I really don't get hungover. I was very hungover, and golf was on, and I was like, I got Tom Hoagie, like, tied for the lead to start. Like, all right, we're good. And he made, like, an early double, and then I was like, it's over. And then Spieth started making putts, and I vividly remember, like, falling asleep during the final round, being like, this is over, and waking up and being like, wait, like, Tom Hoagie's, like, in this? Like, makes a TIB, and I just remember, like, I never thought he had a chance for a nice bit, because Spieth looked like it was just his tournament to lose. People were crowning him like they were on Max last week. But I have good memories at this event hitting Hoagie last year, and I think we can do it again.
Yep. I mean, I hope they have a little better memories, because I also had Seamus Power too, and I saw him blow, I think it was a 4-shot lead going to Monterey. But I also had Jordan Spieth, because he dipped in the odds too, and I thought I was coming home, and then I had my weekend ruined twice, which is a really
no, that's bad tough day. Like two separate times in a golf tournament you think your guy is going to win and he doesn't. That's tough. I'll give you that. Like, that's kind of a tough thing to deal with. So I hope there's no heartbreak for us this week.
That's fine. Listen, we both came out came off outrights with Max, including the entire golf gambling community.
Do you want to like talk about how smart you are for picking Max, or like, do I want to talk about how smart I am for picking Max? Like, where do you kind of want to go with this? Because it was a really sneaky, under the radar, had to put a lot of time and effort into it. Like, not a lot of people came to that conclusion. So like, do you want to brag, or like, should I?
I mean, look, like, if the books were going to offer him at like 25, 28 to one, kind of that range when they opened it, I mean, a guy like Max Homa, who fits pretty much everything you're looking for at Torrey Pines, got length, his long iron numbers have been really good, great putter on California, you know, good around the green. Like, that's exactly what you need for Torrey Pines. It was kind of a no-brainer. And I'm actually, it's nice that a lot of guys in the golf gambling community hit Homa. It's kind of encouraging that, listen, we kind of know what we're talking about, and you know, we're doing a good job preparing you guys, the listeners, you know, getting you guys informed about like what stats you need to know about, what stats you need to care about, because if we're in tune, it means you guys are in tune. So it's, if we're winning, you guys are winning.
Like, even like, you know, some, like my cousin, or like, who's like a very casual golf fan that like likes to bet, was like, yeah, I'll bet, like, bet Max on it. Like, it was just, it just, he was at a good number and he wins. Like, I talked about it on my pod. I like literally like went through the range. I'm like, Max Homa is literally the same range, same like odds as like Sungjae, Mav McNeely, like Taylor Montgomery. Like, why wouldn't you just bet the guy that actually wins? And I think not being on him at Potomac, where it was kind of like a bunch of, I vividly remember the field that week just wasn't a lot of guys that have a lot of win equity, and he was like 40-50 to 1, and I just didn't bet it for whatever reason. Like, that kind of regret feeling not having it that week was just like, and he was the last man on my card. Like, I like bet Zal, and then I bet a bunch of long shots. I had someone in that range, and I just landed on Zach Max. And like, sometimes you just kind of have to bet the best play available, and sometimes it hits. But it is truly incredible that he does not have a runner-up finish on tour.
Yeah, the guy's a stud. I mean, every time he seems like he's been contention, he's a good closer. So let me ask you though, because I have a feeling people are really jumping the gun for betting him at the Masters. Are you somebody who's already bet him to win the Augusta, or are you?
No, I did not bet him. Like, I honestly think him at LACC is like a fair shout. Like, I have no problem with it at, like, you could get him, you could have got him at like 40-50 to 1. Like, again, like, I think that will necessarily happen? Like, no, but I don't think it's a bad number, and I don't think it's like a bad thing to have on your card going into it. But again, like, kind of the joke about him is that he only has like one top 15 in majors, and as we've talked about many a time, is that people that win majors usually have experience in majors. I don't think that like that would be an issue, but again, it's a good number, so just bet it. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it if you could still get it, but I don't think he's gonna win the US Open. Like, I just don't think it's like gonna be that easy. And like, we've kind of seen in the past where certain events are so hometowny for a single golfer, like Rory in 2019 at the Open, like, it could add a little bit of added pressure. So it would be great, but I don't know if we could have two absolutely massive Homa community hits in like 6 months.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that maybe we've reached critical mass with that. No, I mean, I agree with you. I think when we've talked about the major previews, usually a guy, a first-time winner, actually has been kind of relevant, done something, kind of get their feet wet. So I'm actually kind of hoping that maybe at the Masters, maybe he's 36 hole leader. Maybe he's in the mix going into the weekend. Yep. And, you know, doesn't really go well for him. Cause I really like him for Oak Hill. I think,
yeah,
that's
the thing about him, is that like, I was listening to him on the NLU pod. He's like, I love hitting long irons. Like, my four irons, my favorite club in the bag. What fucking tour pro says that? No, like, literally, like, who likes hitting long irons?
Yeah.
And he is excellent off the tee, and he's a great long iron player. So that is PGA US Open. Like, that is what you need to do. So again, I agree. I think it would be a much better bet, and it will look a lot better if he contends at Oak Hill or Masters, which he should.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, and then so you want to get right to Pebble here?
Yeah. No, I'm down to talk some Pebble. But again, you know, three course rotation, only two rounds at Pebble Beach, which obviously everyone knows, and then we have two rounds at Spyglass and Monterey, all very, very short courses by tour standards. These are yardages that like you and your buddies like might play from the tips at like your club. And I think when you just small sample size, obviously, but when you look at the last two winners of this event, they are just excellent iron players, and they are just excellent mid to wedge players, and that is their defining attribute. Daniel Berger and Tom Hoge are just really good iron players, and they came out on top the past 2 years. So I do think the recipe for finding a winner isn't, you know, the most complex thing in the world this week.
Yeah, I mean, so my article this week, I put in all the relative skill set charts from Data Golf, and high correlation of really good iron players tend to have a lot of success here. High correlation of guys who are really good on POA and putting are really good here. You know, so you just mentioned, you know, like Daniel Berger, Jordan Spieth, those types, Brant Snedeker, even, he's won this a couple times. You know, I mean, we have gotten some oddball winners. I think kind of what this done, we've talked about this at length, you know, in the golf gambling community for ever since, you know, basically the live split, is that a lot of guys, you know, we see a lot of winners like, you know, between under 75 to one now, a lot of guys who would be long shots, you know, in the past might be in that range now. So yeah, like that's where I'm focusing my bets this week, under 100-1, because I think in a normal field, in a normal golf world, these guys are probably 150 anyways. I don't really got to go much deeper than that, but yeah, they all have really good iron games, generally good putting, you know, good from short distances too. Yeah. I mean, it's really, it wasn't that complicated to kind of pick out, you know, some of these guys this week that I wanted to bet.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like again, just overall betting strategy. I know we kind of have a similar card, but I started my card at 28-1. Like I don't want to spend up for a guy this week at the top of the board. I think last year Spieth in horrible form, but he always plays well here. Like I think that was a good bet, but to spend almost all of your unit allocation on Fitz, Jordy, or Hovland, like I just don't really think that is an amazing strategy this week. And obviously one of them could win. I just don't feel like spending up for any of them this week. And especially in a field like this, where a lot of long shots have done well. And we literally saw a golfer last year that hadn't won on tour for like seven, like literally never won on tour, but with just an absolutely perfect fit and like be the three-time major champion. So I think this is a week where we can get a winner north of 30-1.
Oh, I agree. I most of my card is between 50 and like 90. I only have one guy. Actually, we share the same guy. He was north of 30 when I got him. Yeah. So, but I looked at the same thing as you. Like, yes, we are on this run of like high favorites, but I feel like the top three in this field, you know, not quite as like invincible.
Yeah.
Or the big bads like the last 2 weeks, you know, like Amex, we had Rahm, you had Xander, Cantlay, Finau. Last week, you look at all the guys, Rahm, Xander, JT, Homa, like all, like a lot of really big names. And now it's, listen, like Spieth is really good here. He's really dodgy. I mean, we just saw what happened to him at Sony. He was first round leader and then just cratered. You got Matthew Fitzpatrick, who has never technically won the PGA Tour. It's just that major finish. And honestly, actually at Pebble, he's got that top 10 last year, but
yeah,
that hasn't really been all that impressive. And then you got Victor Hovland, who can't seem to win in the United States. If you want to believe
so,
that.
So like, I am so fine passing like on all, like of the three, I would say like, if you had to pick one, I prefer Jordy. Like, I think he is the best bet because there are just courses that he always seems to contend on and play well on. But of those three, he's definitely my favorite. I really have no interest in Fitz or Hovland this week. Do you like Jordy the most out of those three?
I mean, I think I like Hovland the most, but honestly, all three have the requisite the skill sets to do well here. I think there were some top 20 prices on a couple books that were way mispriced on a couple of these guys. Like, if you want to do that, like if you see a plus sign in front of these guys for a top 20, like, look, like they can bring their B game and probably finish inside the top 20. But I think I like Hovland the best just because he's got the US AM win here. He finished T12 as a low AM back in 2019 at the US Open, only a T38 at his lone like 18 T Pebble appearance. But his problems that week were mostly with the putter, and he's had some really good performances on POA ever since then. So I think maybe that can be cleaned up a little bit. And like, I mean, his short iron numbers, like, yeah, we think of him as a long iron specialist, but he's good from any range.
Yeah.
And especially because they've got a lot of rain over the last month or so, these are going to be pillow soft. I mean, he could really, really just go to town and just target practice these things.
Yeah. I actually saw something funny. I want to bring this up right now just because it's a funny aside, but someone tweeted the interview with Hovland, and they said, "What brings you here?" "Well, I wanted to play last week, but I just didn't feel like I was quite ready to. I've just been traveling too much. I didn't want to go overseas. Like, I like it here. I love it here." He is playing this week because he played the Saudi Invitational like a year or two ago, and they made him play Pebble. Like, I'm pretty sure that's an accurate statement, right?
Yeah, actually, you know what? I never made that connection.
Like, so, that's the only reason Hovland here is because I think the PGA Tour made him for playing the Saudi like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why he answered that way, but yeah, I'm not betting any of them. I think they're all fine plays, but I definitely prefer Jordy. And then the next three guys, like really, I would say tough number on Mav, and I think fair number on the next two, but Mav, Seamus, and Hoagie, like, again, I just don't have any interest in betting this week. And I think there's good cases to be made for all of them. I just don't trust like any of them that much to get a win this week. And I think Hoagie, like, I know a lot of people are betting him, and you can get him at 25-1 on points bet, which I'm a little bit surprised at that that's his number. Right now, like, I don't know. Like, the guy isn't going to win for his whole entire career, win Pebble. And then, like, if I'm not mistaken, he's not really – he's had some good finishes, of course, but he's not, like, truly been in contention on Sunday since Pebble last year, unless I'm completely mistaken. And, like, now he's just going to, like, win again. I know KH Lee did it. I just don't see it with Hoagie. Like, I just don't think he's just going to go back to back. Obviously, it's a good fit, but I just think ever since he won Pebble, anytime it's a short course, everyone just loves to bet Hoagie, and he just hasn't really performed up to that level again that we saw that week. So I'm good on him. And then Sheamus, like, I don't know. I'm just not gonna get there on Sheamus.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Sheamus had a really good performance over in the Middle East. He gave about 8 strokes tee to green at the Abu Dhabi. Coming back here, I mean, he won Bermuda. Honestly, like, kind of looking at my card as I reveal it, it kind of looks very similar to the card that I put out for Bermuda. Yeah. I think there's a lot of skill sets at when you go to the Bermuda Championship that work here too. But yeah, I didn't get there with Sheamus. I thought about it, didn't love the number at the end of the day, but I mean, I can see a strong performance from him. I think, you know, where he specializes is with his short irons. He's a really good putter too. You know, for whatever reason, he just has trouble at Monterey. I'm not really.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, he, like, genuinely has admitted it, that, like, he just doesn't like one of the courses. Like, I think he's a fine first round leader play. I'm sure he'll be very low. And I'm kind of done with first round leaders, to be honest, because they're impossible to hit. And I think a new strategy for first round leaders is to, like, literally bet long shots that don't make any sense to you. Like, if that makes any sense. Like, betting obvious guys first round leader don't seem to hit. Like, it always just seems to be a random long shot, in my opinion.
So basically, you just give, like, the field to your mom and just say, hey, pick, like, 5 guys.
Like, and, north of 50.
Yeah, and if they land on David Lingmerth or Ryan Armour or anything like that, then you know what? You just go with that.
And Maverick Neal is not going to win. He's not going to win a 20-1. Like, literally has zero ball striking. I'm not a stats guy. Literally zero ball striking stats. Mm-hmm. Over, like, literally, like, is not, like, just putting really well every single week. And I'm not really sure you can win like that. I think you do have to be a pretty good iron player. And he just kind of hasn't. But this is very similar to when you came on for the Zozo and we both didn't bet the top of the board, and I'm like, I'm starting my card with a loser. I'm betting Andrew Putnam this week at 28-1. I bet him at the Sony and I bet him at the Amex. So to go to a place where he top five, or I don't know if it's top five, but he played really well here last year, had a share of the lead going into the final round, plays well, and is second in this field and just total strokes gained over the past 50 rounds. Like, the guy's been playing really good golf for a really good time. And I think it's a really similar situation to Hoagie, where it's a guy that hasn't broken through, but this is a perfect spot for him. And it's a place he likes, and he's been playing really well. It's a horrible number, but I think it's fair given his course history and how he's been playing. So I have no problem starting my outright card with a guy who's never won on the PGA Tour, and that is Andrew Putnam at 28-1.
Yep. Well, I also landed on him too. Let's have a discussion a little bit about his ball striking, because I mean, you can kind of make the same complaints about Andrew Putnam that you came up with Maverick Neal. Listen, I will admit it. Like, look at his proximity numbers; they're not very good. Like, he's a better iron player, I think, over the last year, but it's not really what you're looking for as far as, all right, under 150, I want these guys. But what separates Andrew Putnam for me to a Maverick Neal is that, yeah, like, his proximity numbers aren't that good. But if you look at actually his rate of hitting greens in between 100 and 150, he's 86th percentile on the PGA Tour, and he's about 80th percentile in poor shot avoidance. So what that tells me is that when you get a guy who's that good of a putter, and if he's just getting himself in a good position for a good look at birdie, he's going to contend, he's going to hit it usually, especially, you know, with these small greens as well. You're not going to have a lot of really long putts too. So, and he just mentioned it as well, a lot of close calls lately. second at Zozo, fourth at Sony. He even finished fifth at FedEx. And I like seeing a lot of these, like for kind of like an unheralded guy who's trying to break through a lot of different times where he's kind of in the mix. Even at Amex, a couple of weeks ago, wasn't a great finish for him, but T36, respectable. I like it coming back to the shorter track. He played well here last year, and that's where I actually started my card. I can kind of see it with him.
Like, I think it's very similar to Hoagie, like, last year. Like, I just really do think he will be in contention. And, like, he's not the best iron player in the world, but, like, he gained 3.5 at the Shriners. Like, he gained 3 at Houston. Like, he's capable of gaining on approach. So, I'm totally fine going to Putnam. Do you like – who's your next guy that you're betting in, like, kind of the 40 – to 50 range? Are you betting anyone in that range? Is there anyone you like? Who's the second man on your card?
Yeah, I mean, I got him at 50, but I think he's hanging around like 45-1 or so. It's another loser. It's a guy that can't close. It's Thomas Dietrich.
Yeah,
everybody's, I think, crack cocaine when it comes to Thomas Dietrich. I mentioned him last night on our show to Boston Capper, and he just got a little look in his eye, and I'm like, oh, you are going to bet way too much on Thomas Dietrich this week, aren't you, buddy? Listen, though, there's a lot of things I like about Thomas Dietrich. This is a high-quality player, and it's a very limited sample size with him, but his short iron numbers are really good. You look at what he's done on some of the shorter tracks so far on the PGA Tour, 15th at Mayakoba, 2nd at Bermuda, 12th at Fortinet. He can do a little bit on, West Coast Poa. 5th at the BMW PGA Championship as well. So, 13th at the Ned Bank on the European Tour. Two solid finishes the last couple of weeks. Last week at Farmers, he was in the position for a top 20, kind of had a bad Sunday. Yep. But, I like him coming back to this track. I think 50-1 on him for a guy that I think is very talented.
Yeah.
He just has, for whatever reason, hasn't won. I think it's a good number for him, and he fit a lot of things I'm looking for this week. So I went with Dietrich as my next guy at 50-1.
Yeah, I write an article for Odds Checker, as you know, and I write up two guys, and I'm like, I write it Sunday night, so I was like, two guys, no matter the odds, I'm betting. Dietrich was on it. I'm going to bet Dietrich every single week he tees it up in a shitty field on the PGA Tour. Like, that is just a rule I have, because like you said, I just believe that he's an extremely talented golfer. And although he can't win and can't close and puts himself in contention a lot, like, it is bound to happen at some point. I'm not betting him at API, but in an absolutely dreadful field this week, like, I have no problem betting him at 50-1. And his best finish so far, which an event which he really could have backdoored to win if something fell his way, was Bermuda, which is a coastal short course where you have to get to 19 under, and he did that. So I like the fact that he played the last 2 weeks regardless of the results. This is a guy I'm gonna bet all the time, so I don't even, like, there's nothing to sell or there's no debate. Like, I am betting Thomas Dietrich every single time he tees it up in a shitty field this year. It's just a rule I'm going to have, and hopefully I won't have to do it anymore. But I really do hope he gets it done this week.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, he spent all that time in the European Tour, and listen, those are basically garbage fields every single week. So he's probably comfortable going to a field knowing that there's not a lot of guys that think he can probably beat him. So yeah, this is probably his comfort zone. I think that's a good way just to go about it. Like, bet him. You're going to bet him a lot during the summer. You're going to bet him probably John Deere, Rocket Mortgage, Wyndham, all of those shitty fields.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, first two guys on the card, we're both betting. I'm glad we have some shared interest there. A guy that, to be honest, I don't want to win, because my friend Matt Gannon, who writes for the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, which everyone should go check out his work. He texted me. He's like, can someone bet Smalley at 65-1 for me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And my total aside, my company was bought. We got new laptops. They had to change our emails. And I literally had like one of the most hectic Monday mornings I've ever had at work. And I didn't bet it in time, and it moved to 50. And he already had it bet and like cashed it out so I could bet him. I don't know why he did that. And now he's not betting him. So I would feel really bad if Smalley won this week at 65-1, which he was at. He is not anymore, but I see that you, because you're a smart bettor, got him at 65-1 this week. But I decided I'm going to throw a little bit on him for me and Matt if he does win. Small play. But congrats on the 65-1. It's a great number, and I would assume this is kind of just a talent play.
Yeah, it was really a numbers play. But you know what, though? Listen, he's technically, I'm his boss, and if Alex Smalley wins, maybe I'll give him a little bit of a bonus, you know?
Okay,
sweet. Out of what I win. No, like, listen, this was kind of, all right, I saw Smalley 65. I just thought that was, yeah, it was, I didn't think it was a great price. I'm not in love with Smalley, to be perfectly honest. But it's hard to ignore how good he's hitting the ball right now. Now, yeah. What I was concerned with, though, is that Southeast guy, get him out of California. Is he really a good putter on POA? And overall in California, it's not all that great, but I think that's mostly because of his first two events. I think his last three events in California on California POA, he's actually gained strokes putting. So that does give me a little bit of confidence that maybe he can putt well here. But yeah, like, it's hard to ignore the iron numbers. It's hard to ignore the fact that he is a good putter. Seems like he can putt on this surface. I don't really love a lot of the proximity stats with him, but maybe those are just really old. He's kind of figured things out. But yeah, I think Alex Smalley, 65-1, a guy with a top 10 finish at RSM, a fourth at Houston, an 11th at Bermuda, 22nd at American Express. The guy's just playing really solid golf right now, and I can get him at 65 in a pretty bad field. I figure I might as well just add to the card. It wasn't all that expensive for me. I can jam that in.
Yeah, so someone I missed that I'm betting – that I didn't talk about. Shout out RK and King. But I bet Cooch at, I got a 47-1 on Bookmaker. And that's a book where just like odds kind of drift. Like best you could get on him is 40. I don't hate that if you could fit it into your card. But again, just kind of betting on a guy that I think maybe possibly could squeeze out one more win in his career. A guy that's always dominated shorter positional golf courses, and a guy that's coming off a seventh place finish at the Sony Open where he gained strokes in all major categories. And yeah, I just like, I think the number is horrible, but again, in this, like in a week like this, like you're going to be betting some bad numbers. We've seen a lot of older golfers play well here. Like this guy, like could have won a major and has a bunch of wins on tour, and he has a little, you know, showing a little shine of life. So I'll take Cooch. Like I'll just take an old dude that maybe possibly can get one more win. And it wasn't that long ago where he's won. So yeah, I'll bet Cooch this week. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like he checks a lot of the boxes. Like he's still hitting his short irons pretty good. He's still a good scrambler, still a good putter, still is pretty accurate off the tee. Good putter on POA. You know, looking at his kind of his history though, at Pebble Beach hasn't been all that great, but listen, like in this dog shit field, can I see him putting together 4 days of competent golf and maybe backing into a win on Sunday? I think that's fine. I think actually close to 50-1 for Matt Kuchar, who's had some solid results going back to last fall and last year. I think that's fine. I mean, look, like none of these guys are going to be betting are perfect.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I just want as many bullets as possible. Yeah. Like I just want as many bullets, like good, as many bullets on golfers that play well on short courses like as possible, and then like hopefully someone just kind of does it. But I think the most like obvious pick this week in terms of like north of 50-1, like a guy that just like makes a lot of sense and is like at a very bettable number is Ben Griffin. Like I just like I think it is, in my opinion, the most obvious play. Do you agree? Like I think it is an extremely straightforward pick this
week. Yeah, I mean, like, if you're just looking at a model, he's basically hitting pretty much every single button you want to look for. I mean, tee to green, he's been awesome. The short iron number has been really good with him. Some really good finishes so far in his PGA Tour career. You got the third of Bermuda, which he probably should have won. We mentioned that a couple times, though. That's a tournament that basically values a lot of similar things as what we're going to see this week. You got T12 of Sony. Just a lot of really quality finishes. I've been betting him a lot in the top 40 market. It seemed like he's been like plus 175, 2-1 every tournament, just been hitting that over and over and over. So yeah, like 70-1 in this field with a lot of these attributes I like, that's very appealing to me. Now, is he actually ready to win? I don't know, but this is 70-1. It's not a very expensive number. It's a guy that I think is talented. I mean, like, this isn't like a retread guy who lost his card a couple times, maybe riding like a little bit of a hot streak right now. This is a younger guy, first year, you know, maybe, you know, he was a pretty good amateur. You know, things kind of got a little sideways for him. He had become a mortgage officer for a little bit and a Monday qualifying because somebody basically just said, hey, why don't you just try it? End up having a new lease on life. Maybe, you know, that's good karma for him. So, yeah, but like, listen, he's very popular, but Max Homa last week was popular. I'm not trying to compare.
It's not even the same. Like, no, like my casual friends aren't like, yo, Ben Griffin's been popping for me. Like, no, I don't think it's like that, but like, in my opinion, like there, like a thing I like to see at least is that like a 31st place finish at Torrey where like he has no business really playing well, like, and like he just seems to be playing well on it, like on courses that don't fit him. But I really do like the fact that he blew it at Bermuda. Like, I think that like playing in the final group and like having to lean on a back nine is like, we've seen it time and time again that like it really like builds confidence and it makes you a lot like better the next time you're in it. Like, even again, everything back to Tom Hoge, but like Tom Hoge at American Express, like 2 weeks before his win at Pebble, was very, very much in the mix on Sunday and came up short. And then he used that, and he even talked about it in the post-round interview. It kind of felt uncomfortable, but you know, he learned from those experiences. So yeah, that's an easy one for me at 65-1. When I am up early, I'm like, when was he 70? Like, I thought the best, what number? I mean, what book was he 70?
So he briefly, he opened at 65 on DraftKings, and he briefly for like 5 minutes, for whatever reason, DraftKings had some funny things going on this week with it. He dropped to 70 for a little bit. I happened to just catch it, I guess, at the right time. And I saw that and I just bet it. So, but yeah, like for most other places, he opened at 65, 60. I think he's probably between like 50 and 55 now.
No, you could get him at 65 on a points bet.
Oh, really? He's still available there? Okay. I mean, that's still, listen, yeah, 65, that's an 70, easy bet. Whatever.
It's just a very easy bet, in my opinion. Also, shout out, I never tweet out non-golf plays, but I tweeted out Nick's first half money line earlier, and it hit. So, and no one even liked it. Like, no one even acknowledged that. Like, I ran, like, my model made it minus 135, and it was minus 120. So I just slammed it. So we're good. We got some capital going into this week, so I'm happy. Also, your co-host texted me and said Matt Kuchar gross.
Of course he does. He doesn't like Matt Kuchar. He doesn't like any of the old guys, except for Cam Percy. That's the only old guy on PGA Tour.
Also, we'll talk about it later, but we got to talk about Keegan because he's going to have a fucking – that was almost a nightmare. That was almost legitimately worst – case scenario last week because I was like, I love Keegan, like this is a Keegan course. You play Keegan on long, difficult golf courses with a lot of long irons. But I was like, he's not gonna win. Like, I was like, true, like he's not gonna win. Like, he's not gonna win twice in 3 months. So I actually, like, when you say not guy's not gonna win, he has to be as close to winning as possible. Not so great call by me, pat myself on the back. But I like hedged a little bit on Ryder. And I didn't bet Keegan, even though I thought he was a great play. And if Keegan beat Matt, like that would, like, I literally wouldn't have done the podcast this week. So shout out Keegan for not winning because he's saving it for something later in the year, I think.
Yeah, maybe Valspar. Maybe we'll get redemption. Capper and I were on him at Valspar for that first when he knocked.
I was thinking like Keegan. I hate saying this so early. Keegan top 20, top 10 at the PGA Championship is a fucking mega whale bomb mortgage play. Like literally like take out your kid's college fund play.
Of course. Yeah. Like, I mean,
he could win. Like, he could fucking win at Oak Hill.
I don't know about win, but I think that definitely plays a little bit into his hands. I mean, what would be cool though, is that I've made a lot of TPC Potomac comps to what I think the weather is going to be for Oak Hill. And that would be kind of cool if we got Max Homa versus Keegan Bradley in the rematch of TPC Potomac, that waterlogged golf course. And
That was tough. That was a tough one. I was actually in person and I didn't bet either of the winners that week. But the next guy you're betting, a guy I bet a lot, and like I'm hopping off, and I hope it doesn't bite me. But Will Gordon, is this another just number talent play? He's better than his current number.
I mean, I might have a Will Gordon problem. I mean, I'm not fair and biased. I have always been an apologist for him. I remember making a huge thing. One of our first podcasts in the Gulkin podcast was the Corrales. We decided to cover that event when nobody really cared about it. But I made a big stand for Will Gordon. He was awful number, like terrible. But I just said, listen, he was third of travelers. He's got to be pretty good. And he was awful. But I think I just always believe in the kid's talent. I'm going to be an apologist for him again. I think he's been very, very close to like a really good PGA Tour season. Like, obviously he got the third at Mayakoba. He wasn't in the mix though. Like Henley was up six going into
literally had no shot to win the tournament, but
right. So I'm looking at T35 or Bermuda, and he was only a couple back going into Sunday, and actually going to the back nine, he was still in it. And I had a top 40 on him that week, and he just got on the bogey train. And I think I needed him just par the last hole, which nobody was parring that day because it got real windy, and he managed to do that. But listen, like that Sunday maybe goes a little bit more of his way. Maybe he's got a top 10 there, looks a little different. T15 RSM Classic. He was in the mix a little bit there too. Sony Open as well. He was also, I think, four back at the league going into Sunday, ends up finishing T20 with a bad Sunday. So the guy it's close, and I believe in his talent, and he does fit a couple things that I'm looking for this week. Like, you know, if you look at his long range proximity numbers under 150, they don't look that good because it captures that really bad loss year in the PGA Tour. But this fall, if you just look just the last year or so, it's actually been pretty decent with him too. So I like the fact that on some of these shorter golf courses, he has shown well. He has shown the ability, at least after 54 holes, get kind of close to the lead. You know, eventually you just keep knocking on that door, it's going to come down. So 75-1 Will Gordon for a guy that I probably shouldn't have this much faith in and invested this much money in at this point. But I believe in the kid's talent. I think he's really close to breaking out in a big way in the PGA Tour. So I add it to the card.
And he's a first round leader king.
Probably. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he had two first round leaders in the fall swing.
Did he really?
Yeah.
My co-host know that. I'm not. Yeah, I don't track the first round leaders stuff like my co-host does. But listen, I would.
He had two first round leaders in the fall. So I'm adding a first round leader. That'll be my exposure, Tim. But like, kind of once you realize a guy is a first round leader guy, like he never does it again. So that's kind of a tough aspect to it. But
they go to live like Sebastian Munoz did.
Yeah, that's kind of tough.
How's PGA Tour going to recover?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just give up. Like, it's fine. Like, but we'll talk some Bonesaw after. We'll talk some Bonesaw. But I bet you guys at 80. I just want to say, like, shout out PGA Town. I invented writing up David Lipsky on a tournament preview. So I just want to clarify that I invented doing that. I wrote him up at the Amex. And he's a popular player this week, and I think it makes sense. A lot of the reasons I liked him at the Amex, I again like him this week. Can't hop off on a guy like Lipsky, but he just dominates short courses. Played really well at Sony earlier in the year. And he's 80-1, and he's won on the European Tour, and he's won on the Korn Ferry Tour, and he plays well on short coastal tracks. So I'll take a shot. And then in the same respect as Kuchar, I'll bet another guy that kind of 3 years ago was like a lock and someone you always bet at short positional golf courses, and that's Brendan Todd. I'm betting both of them, so like there's no like case to be made, but like I don't really get why Todd is double the price of Kuchar.
Probably just name value alone. They've had a lot of similar results. So yeah, I think that's actually a very astute point you make right there.
Like I don't think there's like 40 points of difference between these two golfers. And I'm not even shitting on Kuchar's price because I bet him. But like I would they're basically the same. Like they have equal shot to win the tournament, in my opinion. And Todd is obviously gonna pop in your models this week. And like Kuch, he's had some results recently. He was 7th at the CJ Cup, 21st at Sony. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense why he's not, but, you know, he could do it this week. 8-1, who cares? He's won before, but we could do it.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple top tens in the fall, too. I mean, he's actually, his pebble history is pretty good. Like, a lot of the bad pebble history came when he almost left the PGA Tour. He's thinking about getting a pizza franchise, basically. Like, that's where a lot of disastrous ones were. But other than that, I think he's got 3 top tens at this event.
Boom.
And like you said, like, a lot of similar things that he does to Kuchar. You know, really good with the short irons, good scrambler, good putter, too. Yeah, like, listen, I really like Brendan Todd. I'm going to put out something tomorrow night. I might be discussing him, so stay tuned.
Okay.
But I fully endorse your bet on old, boring, vanilla Brendan Todd.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I hope he wins. So last time we did a pod together, it was for the RSM, and we had a, you were like trying to make me bet Neesmith, and I was like, I'm out on Neesmith. Like, I'm not betting him. And then I think he missed the cut, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And he's missed his first 2 cuts of the year. But I bet him at 100-1 this week because my sharp plus EV data nerd friends liked him. So I was like, all right, I'll bet Neesmith. And he has 2 top 15s here. And he's 100-1. And it's a good buy low spot. And I'm betting a bunch of bombs. So, yeah, I'll bet Matty Nee. New nickname circulating, just Matty Nee this week. But he's a good ball striker. Popped at the Shriners earlier this year. That was a short course. He probably should have played well at RSM. Didn't. I don't really know why. But yeah, just a nice buy low spot on Matty Nee this week.
Right, that's fine. I mean, listen, like, when you get down to this range in this field, like, you're going to have to make some ugly picks. So listen, it's fine. He's not for me this week. You know, maybe that's going to work out in your favor. Maybe I'm just not the Matthew Neesmith whisperer. Maybe you are. So yeah, that could work out definitely in your favor this week. So I only had one other guy down here, Robbie Shelton at 90-1. Now, last week obviously didn't go very well at the Farmers. That's not a Shelton golf course, but a T6 at Amex, T10 at RSM, T15 at Shriners, T21 at Fortinet. Really good numbers from under 175 and under 150 so far in the PGA Tour. Now, like, if you stretch it out long range, his scoring numbers from that range has been very good, but, you know, so far, because he's been playing well, they've been looking very good. So, again, 90-1 for a guy who's had a couple of pretty decent finishes. I think this is more going to suit his track. He's never played this before, so that's a little concerning. But, you know, I like the number. I like what I've seen out of Robbie Shelton. You know, he fits a little bit of stuff I'm looking for this week.
All right, so that's our pebble cards. If we don't have a guy in the mix out of all those guys we just named, then, like, I don't really know what we're doing here. But we got a lot of golf. Everyone's playing this week, except for the Elite PGA Tour. We have the Ras Al Khaimah, or Khamid, I don't know, event on DP World Tour, which Ryan Fox won last year. I'm betting Ryan Fox. Like, he's going back to back. I'll always bet Ryan Fox. So betting Ryan Fox. But then we have the Bonesaw Invitational, the Saudi International, Live Before Live. And it's bettable. It's certainly bettable. Like, it is definitely something you could get somebody down on. I do not have any picks at the moment, but I know you do. But, you know, just, I don't think everyone has this, you know, just ready to go. But we got DJ at 8, Cam at 9, Joaquim at 11, Cam Young at 15, Brooks at 17, Lucas at 20, Reed 21, Casey 23, Varner 26. So that's kind of what we're working with. So who are you betting? Because we have some familiarity with these golfers.
Yeah, so before I get into who I bet, maybe I'll just give, like, a brief course overview, because, listen, maybe you guys haven't really seen this thing. So we're at Royal Greens. This is a Pass Palom golf course right on the shores of the Red Sea there. Only 7,000 yards long. So it's, you know, relatively narrow golf course. They tried to structure the golf course where a lot of stuff bottlenecks, where it's in the landing zone there. Pretty thick Bermuda rough on both sides there too. But honestly, like, you look at some of the guys have been done really well here. Guys just kind of bomb it here. I mean, you look at DJ, he's won it twice. Matthew Wolf has done very well here. Brooks obviously won this. Bubba did very well. I think he finished second last year. Harold Varner has done it. And then you've seen some sort of shorter, accurate guys have done well here, like an Abe Anser or like, you know, Graham McDowell. So kind of like a little bit of maybe like a Bay Hill situation where it's either bombers or guys just want to keep it right in the fairway there. So that kind of was, you know, for outrights though, who gives a shit about any of that stuff? Because a lot of these guys, we haven't really seen any of the stats. It's not really a whole lot to go off of with that. So it's mostly kind of narrative stuff with me. But if you're going to target a guy this week, probably a guy who's pretty strong off the tee, or maybe kind of keeps it in the fairway. We've had five events here. Maybe take a look at some of those top tens, and maybe pick a couple guys. But so I started with Cam Young at 15-1. Like, obviously, okay. I don't really need to go into Cam Young at 15. Like, that's another thing too. Like, I didn't bet a whole lot on this tournament. This is kind of just fun money, just to see what happens. So I can see this is kind of an error. I can see this going one of two ways. Either Cam Young has, like, sent here by the PGA Tour to kill everybody. He's just drank the Kool-Aid and he's going to prove a point. He's going to, and like, this is his first win. We've all been waiting and now it's going to be the bone saw. This is going to be his first win. Or maybe he pulls like the ultimate heel NWO move and he wins this thing. He's actually been a live guy all along. And then he declares, and somehow like this, the whole thing is fake. It's CGI'd and they just rig this thing to where he's the winner. And then he declares he's on live. And then that's their big free agent, you know, reveal. Yeah. And then, you know, then they kick off the season. They kind of same thing with Mito Pereira. I bet him at 33-1. Again, you know, the stats wise, he's really good off the tee, really good tee to green. It's kind of wonder why they haven't really announced him as joining LIV yet.
They got to be waiting for some Mo. They got to just be waiting.
Well, maybe this is it. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, what set my alarms off about maybe the stuff is kind of bullshit is when Henrik Stenson won after he got stripped of the captain seat. Like that screams fishy to me. So I know it's very far-fetched. I know it's very QAnon to think that, they can rig golf tournaments, but look, like Mito winning this week and then joining LIV, I think that would be good, you know, momentum for them. And then two guys, I just liked the number. Bryson was at 35-1 this week. And
I'm not sure if he's good at golf anymore. Well, I watch his YouTube videos and like, he doesn't look that good. Like, and he hasn't done dick on LIV, and like everyone on LIV has like at least like played well for like one tournament. I understand it's a numbers play. I'm just like confused with Bryson.
Let me make the argument for Bryson. So he was hurt last year. I mean, he had a wrist injury and a hip injury. And we've seen guys with wrist injuries, they take a while to recover, like Daniel Berger, Hideki. He's had a full year basically recovered. It's actually been a year since he got injured himself. He's dropped the weight too. I like that. I think he finally figured out he doesn't need to be JJ Watt in order to hit it like 350. You know, there's plenty of other ways to gain club head speed. So I think, you know, if he is healthy, if his mind is in it, like obviously really good off the tee, you can overpower this place. I like the 35-1 number. And then I also bet Matthew Wolff at 35-1. He's done actually very well at the Saudi. He has a couple top tens. I think the move to LIV for him, actually, like we joke about a lot of these guys going over. I actually think LIV is good for Matthew Wolff just because it seemed like he just wasn't cut out for the PGA Tour. He was having those mental health issues. And now that he got paid, the pressure's off. He can just go off and play golf. And without all that pressure, his talent takes over. He's a really talented golfer. Like there's a reason why he won his third start. There's a reason why he had all the hype. There's a reason why he was a 54 hole leader at the US Open. The reason why he shared the lead at the PGA. It's a really good golfer. And maybe that's why when he went over to LIV, like he suddenly stopped hitting every other shot out of bounds or into the water. You know, he's freed up. He's free to just play good. So 35-1 for a guy that I still believe in the kid's talent. It's too bad he's no longer on the PGA Tour, but I think he can do very well. This golf course, he has done well. I like the 35 on him.
I'm betting Chikara.
Okay.
Like, if Bombers have done well here, like, this guy absolutely mashes on the tee, and he's one on LIV, and my boy RK won, like, 20 grand on him, and he's good at golf, so I don't know what number. I see him at 65. I don't know. Yeah, Saudi International. What do I have on my local on him? I'm betting him. I'm not, out of respect for my boy RK, I'm not going to declare it a lock or anything. But I think it's a good bet. Like, I don't, like, I'm down for Chikara.
Okay.
So I'm riding Chikara this week. I don't, that's just like kind of an easy one for me. 58, that's not a good number, but I'll bet him. I'm going to have a little play on him, but I know you have to do your pod, which I'm excited to listen to. I love you and Capper. But I will let you go, but everyone check out the Golf Gambling podcast tonight and every week. Everyone read Steve's previews that are excellent and give a lot of knowledge, and I appreciate you coming on tonight. And maybe, you know, we can do a little, I don't know, maybe like a memorial, like you in for memorial this year, elevated event, get you on do for that. A little better one.
Yeah, or maybe if you come to Rochester for the PGA, maybe we'll do a live show.
Yeah, maybe I think I should go.
I think you should. I think you should come too.
I have no expenses.
Like, yeah, I heard something with Andy on his show. I mean, the flight up. I mean, it probably is a little more expensive. Week up, like, but it's probably not that crazy. Honestly, the drive is not that bad. I used to date a girl in Long Island. I made the drive. It's not.
Yeah, I mean, I went to school in Buffalo. I've done the drive many times.
Okay, well, there you go.
Like, yeah, it's fine. I could do it. It's just a matter of like, is it worth it to go up for one day? Or I have to spend $600 to see 2 days of golf.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, I mean, if you pick the right outright, then your trip is paid for.
No, we'll probably have like at least 7 outright hits by then. So like we should be fine.
There you go.
Yeah, we're all good. Also, no pod next week for waste management. Unfortunately, I will be in Punta Cana. I will be drunk on a beach, and the internet connection is not good there. And I'll obviously be betting the event, and maybe I'll do like an audio pod or something, but no pod for waste management. So that's just more reason to listen to the Golf Coming podcast next week. But I hope everyone has a wonderful night, and we will talk soon, and I'll probably see you at Bay Hill in 2 weeks. That will be the next TIB tentatively right now. So everyone have a wonderful night, and we will see you soon.